Congressman Richie Neal from my district, the 1st District of Massachusetts, is here with us. Richie, as always, I want to thank you for being here and letting us have your insights at a time when you are one of the busiest men in Washington. Okay, so here in my little town of Great Barrington in your district, there are at least, I think, 3 bridges that are out. And now we have the infrastructure program coming up. What's going to happen?
It's going to succeed. We're going to get this infrastructure bill over the goal line. I am determined to do that. I've talked with the president a number of times. I've been in contact with a lot of different groups, advocates for the infrastructure package. I also have been in touch with those who are more suspect about the financing. But I have shared one common belief, and that is the country needs it very badly. There's a broad recognition, left, right, and center, that the country's infrastructure is in very bad shape. So unlike tax or Obamacare with those sorts of issues where one side said, well, they said it, so we're not going to do it, in this instance here, there's a broad agreement on the nature of the problem. The country needs an investment.
Richie Neal, how are we going to pay for it?
We're going to pay for it with some of the tax proposals that President Biden has rolled out. I think that the Senate bill has some life to it. I think that better tax enforcement would go a long way. I think that we are all victims of what I call a very aggressive form of tax avoidance today. So I think that the idea of spending an additional $40 billion on the IRS, which has just been destroyed in terms of its accounting opportunities and the choice between auditing very sophisticated tax returns and people who, for example, use EITC, now lean toward audits of people who use EITC as opposed to people who, again, hire top-notch accountants and attorneys to do tax preparation. So I think that's part of it. I also think that there's going to be an increase in the corporate tax rate, and I think that there's likely to be an increase in the individual top tax rate back to 39.6. Those were Clinton numbers, and they were Obama numbers, and I think that if people have a chance to peer into what really happened with the top rate being cut after, at the time, Secretary Mnuchin assured me that that wouldn't happen. It happened for one reason. When they saw what happened by eliminating the SALT deduction, that they decided that they had to give some relief to top income earners, and that's precisely how it was done.
Speaking of the SALT deduction, I know people like Governor Cuomo and others were bereft when it was eliminated, state and local taxes. How do you envision that coming back, if ever?
Well, we're analyzing it right now, and you've had some very good advocates in the state of New York and in Massachusetts as well. It's one of those fascinating tax topics where there's some truth to what everybody says. And yep. I think that the challenge here on the SALT deduction is that I think legitimately so, blue states like Massachusetts, New York, and California, they tend to send more to Washington in terms of tax obligations than many of the other states. And at the same time, you can hear a pretty vociferous argument on the Republican side where they would suggest that this tends to benefit high-income people. So we're looking for a path here. I'm hopeful that we're going to find one. It was pretty controversial when it was embraced at the beginning, and governors from blue states, they tend to be more up in arms about it than Republicans in red states.
I want to go back, if I may, for a moment, Richie Neal, to the idea about people not paying their taxes. It never occurs to me. I get a W-2 form, I get a this, and we bring it to the tax lady, and we pay the taxes. So eliminated. How do people get away with not paying their taxes?
Well, you've just highlighted something that's important. You get a W-2 form. And withholding brings with it great efficiencies. And the fact that these taxes are a drawdown on one's check, whether it's weekly, biweekly, or monthly, goes a long way toward tax efficiency. And I'll give you a statistic that I think is not only compelling but speaks well of the American people, and that is about 85 to 86% of the American taxpayer base, they comply with federal tax law. That's pretty interesting and pretty noteworthy, as opposed to some countries, for example, in Southern Europe, where there's almost a game that's played of how can you avoid taxes. So I think there's a broad acceptance that to support Social Security, to support Medicare, to support defense spending, to support poverty programs, that we all have this obligation. And at the same time, one of the things that's happened over the last couple of decades, there has been an effort internationally and nationally for a lot of wealthy people to avoid taxes. Now, I'm not headed down this path in a punitive matter. I'm saying that we want to increase the tax compliance rate. We want to boost the IRS to make sure that people who are very wealthy are audited with the same vigor that people are audited at the lower end of the economic spectrum, and also to address the issue of international tax, where there are what is known as very sophisticated efforts in tax havens to avoid corporate tax. So the argument that we're having now, and I'm going to be speaking with Secretary Yellen in the next day when she returns from Venice, I thought that she did a really good job there of addressing the issue of creating a more harmonious international tax structure. And what President Biden and the Secretary have suggested is that we need to analyze not where income is necessarily reported as to having been earned, but instead where it's actually been earned. So I think that the President's proposal here, if he can create a broad acceptance at the G7, now the G20, and there are 130 nations across OECD that have indicated that they are prepared to do this, where it would bring a more scrutiny to international tax principles. And my guess is that so far Secretary Yellen's been very successful on this. And again, we're not looking, or I'm certainly not looking here, to address this with revenge or anything of that. I want a tax system that retains American competitiveness and also acknowledges that there are a number of obligations that we have nationally and internationally as it relates to revenue.
Is this a Republican-Democratic thing?
It shouldn't be. I think that the battle over the IRS has become a Republican-Democratic thing. I think that the Republicans used a series of controversial moments at the IRS to destroy their budgeting. But the argument actually goes back well before that. I mean, the IRS has a interesting responsibility as opposed to, or in contrast, to the rest of the American judicial system. With the American judicial system, you are believed to be innocent until you're proven guilty. With the IRS, it's just the opposite. You are deemed to owe the money, and then you have to prove that you don't owe the money. So it's a juxtaposition of some citizen responsibility. But I do think that in a democratic society, there is a pretty broad-based measure, and that is generally we want more government than we want to pay for.
So let me ask you a question here. I only got a minute for it. But what is the state of the economy? Are we in good shape
then? I'm glad you asked the question. I spent an hour last week with Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, and we went back and forth with the two of us in my office, and I did not attempt to tell him what interest rates ought to be, recalling that the Federal Reserve Board does monetary policy, but Congress does fiscal policy. We have separate responsibilities, but I did want to peer into his thinking. And he indicated to me that he thought the American economy would continue to grow and grow. This is a reporting week, as you know, for many large corporations. And my sense is that he is on a pro-growth pattern, and he is still talking about economic growth that would be north of 6%. He also understands the challenges that we have with skill set, educational attainment, geography, and aligning all of those issues around a more vibrant American economy will be good for all of us.
It's always good for all of us when Richie Neal, the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee and a great friend to this radio station, shows up and gives us the benefit of his knowledge. Richie, thank you so much for
doing
it.
Thank you, Alan.